Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hej och hjärtligt välkommen till Travel News podcast. Mitt namn är Viggo Kavling och jag är chefredaktör för Travel News. Vi är reseindustrins största affärstidning och vi har funnits sedan 1985. Och varje dag så publicerar vi mellan 5 och 10 artiklar om reseindustrin. Ett par av dem är under vignetten Premium och det innebär att bara du som har Premium kan läsa de artiklarna och de innehåller djup kunskap om reseindustrin. Och varför håller vi på med detta? Jo, därför att en professionell affärstidning kan inte vara gratis utan den måste kosta pengar för att jag måste få betalt och mina medarbetare får betalt. Och tack vare det så kan vi fortsätta att utveckla reseindustrin på ett professionellt sätt. Så tycker du detta är viktigt och vill du vara med och stödja en professionell affärstidning och få 500 unika artiklar per år ungefär plus en massa andra häftiga grejer, då ska du naturligtvis skaffa Travel News Premium. Nu har jag tjatat nog om detta, nu till dagens intervju. Jag har pratat med Nick Brooks som är generalsekreterare på All Rail. Och han är alltså EUs, den fria tågmarknadens lobbyist i Bryssel. Och ja, tycker du att vi ska bara ha statliga monopol, då är den här intervjun ingenting för dig. Men tycker du att det ska vara fri konferens, precis som det är på flyget, även på tågmarknaden, då ska du lyssna på den här killen. För han har många idéer hur det ska gå till. Exempelvis tycker han att det ska vara neutrala betalningsplatser där du köper biljetter, så att SJ ska inte ha ett de facto monopol, utan det ska vara en fri marknad och man ska kunna åka tåg runt om i Europa lika smidigt och enkelt som man åker med flyg. Men det finns förstås stora utmaningar och de pratar vi om i den här intervjun. Bandet rullar.
My name is Nick Brooks. I'm Secretary General of All Rail, the Alliance of Passenger Rail New Entrants in Europe.
What is All Rail? Should we start with that?
It's a NGO, an association, a non-profit association. It's pushing for faster market opening in passenger rail across Europe, including in Sweden.
And I'm sitting here with one of your members, MTR. Why is MTR a part of this organization, do you think?
Well, MTR's been there since the very beginning, and it is one of the role models for liberalization in this country. And it shares our beliefs in trying to... But the core belief is that we think there'll be more passengers taking the train if there is market opening, which is good for the environment.
What's the problems for you?
We have a number of issues. We have, four core issues in Europe. Firstly is ticketing. So that's what MDMS, I think we're talking about that later on, what that is all about. Making tickets, rail tickets, more accessible, both within Sweden and also for cross-border international travel. Next, it's access to rolling stock. So how do you get hold of coaches that can use for trains, whether they are for local lines or high speed, anything in between. Thirdly, how do you get track access? And what does it cost to access the tracks all across Europe? And then fourthly, the balance between subsidy and non-subsidized services. So that means public service obligations and open access commercially driven services. Are there too many public service obligations in Europe? And is the taxpayer unnecessarily paying for trains that could be done in a commercially driven manner like MTR Express? And you may think, well, what's the relevance? The relevance is the money could be used instead on other things such as improving tracks.
Let's start with the first one, tickets. I spoke with another guy. I don't remember his name now, but he was working in Brussels as well, and I think he was part of the EU organization. And he was saying that there was going to be a proposal for, to have a neutral ticket system. Is that what you want?
Yes, yes.
And how would that work?
Well, a ticketing system that is impartial, basically transparent. Independent, meaning that basically any citizen, any passenger can go to any app or website and find the same rail data. So they can book a ticket between any place to any other place within Sweden by rail or cross-border in the future. So it's basically opening up and making passenger rail in Europe more accessible and easier to book.
The national train carriers like SAS here in Sweden, they don't want this, of course. What do you think, and they're protesting, what do you think will happen?
I think it's SJ, right, not SAS.
Sorry? SJ, sorry.
Well, it's interesting, in other countries they do want this. So you see a certain double standard. When they expand to other countries, like Norway, they are a little bit like the members of Orel. They're not members of Orel, but they act a little bit like that. So they do want the opening. And of course, when they go to Germany with night trains, they equally want to be shown and sold there on the market dominant platform in Germany. And generally speaking, due to the historical situation, the state-owned rail incumbents, so that's the state-owned legacy carriers, tend to be dominant in ticketing as well. They tend to have over 95% market share in rail ticketing. So it's very hard for other companies that have a train to get exposure, to get fair exposure, to actually let the passengers know that they exist. And I think that's what SJ doesn't want other companies to get the exposure so they compete against SJ. And the sad thing is they control also this ticketing market. So SJ isn't just about being dominant in trains, it's also about being dominant in ticketing. And we have to loosen that dependence, because it would be a good thing for SJ as well if we had what all rail is calling for all across Europe. Then SJ would also find it easier to expand elsewhere.
There's going to be a proposal. This guy I talked to like 3 or 4 months ago. He said it was going to come this summer. Is it going to come this summer, or is it already delayed?
I think it's slightly delayed. Yeah. I think it was originally planned for summer, for June, actually. I personally don't foresee that. This happens in Brussels, that things just take time. We've had this before with other issues. So my latest knowledge is it will now be around about September.
And the problem is, as I understand it, that the national states that own the big train companies in, for example, Sweden, the governments in Sweden don't want this. The last government, the Social Democrat government, they didn't want this. Do you think this new government in Sweden are more open? And how is government thinking across Europe?
I hope the new government is more open on this. That's my expectation and hope. In across Europe, it depends. I think on the ticket, yes, you've identified a key issue in that the state-owned rail carriers, the state-owned incumbents, they do belong to the member states of Europe. And so when we go and say something isn't working, we kind of have to go and lobby the owners of our competitors, which is a bit of a bizarre situation to be in. I'm not sure if that happens in any other sector, really. However, on the ticketing issue, I do believe that some member states, including hopefully Sweden, do recognise there's a problem. The status quo just isn't working. That passengers can't find trains. I mean, that's not very good for the EU Green Deal. That's not very good for sustainability. It's not very good for modal shift to rail. If there are trains out there and passengers don't, and citizens don't know that they are there. That's one thing. And also through tickets, getting to other parts of Europe. I know that Greta is from this country, of course. And
you heard of her, yeah?
Everyone around
She's
the world.
Very famous. Yeah.
Very famous. Is it Flugscham? And she also advocates taking the train across Europe. But as we know, with the existing situation, SJ's international ticketing hasn't been that great. And so there need to be platforms, it can be SJ2, that offer a comprehensive ticketing into Denmark, up to the Norway, and then down into the European continent, better than what exists right now. And I really feel that MDS can help achieve that. Because at the moment, unfortunately, across Europe, there are situations, especially cross-border, where trains are actually running, and there are reasonable connections, but people can't find them, people can't book them. So what's the point of having the trains in the first place?
This is a very complicated situation and goes back to the 18th century when there was war in Europe and you didn't build trains through other countries because you didn't want to make it easy to attack another country. Do you think this ever will be solved, like in the flight business, or what's your big plan?
Well, I don't think despite what's happening in Ukraine, I mean, within the EU, I don't think there's any the war is not an issue at all anymore. fact of the matter is, there must be a single European rail area. The common market or the single market has now existed for 30 years. And we've all seen from the aviation sector how the single European aviation area has worked incredibly well and actually made Europe smaller, because people that previously couldn't afford it could then afford, or had that, could afford the lower prices through market liberalisation with airlines and go around Europe and go on holiday to the Mediterranean, groups of society that previously could not do so. But we've all established now that aviation isn't the most sustainable way of getting around. So, and there is the train, especially night trains as well, but just to get to Denmark and Germany, there are more options coming. And therefore, if they happen, and we hope they do, there needs to be the ticketing so that people find out about them and actually use them and book them, you see. So I think it's coming. Ultimately, the single European rail area has to be lived. It has to be there. That's the whole point. We're in a single market. There is no exemption for railways. Let's go ahead and do it.
Is there capacity on the tracks at the moment for big, for more capacity? Is there on tracks capacity? Well, in Sweden, we hear in the summer that there's going to be almost no trains in the summer. I don't believe that that's bad, but still, there's a big capacity problem, and also that the tracks are not good enough for all this traffic. What do you think? Do you understand the question?
I'm not so familiar with the capacity issue in Sweden. I do understand there are issues in certain areas, especially in certain hubs. For example, I understand that Stockholm Malmö doesn't have optimal capacity yet. And I think it's a separate issue to build the capacity and to build the infrastructure. Certainly, we want it. We want a stronger system. And that will mean improving the infrastructure, because infrastructure just can't stay the same. It has to be improved over time if you want people to take the train more.
But do you think is it possible to have like 20, 40, 50% more passengers on trains in Europe?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean,
and how would that be possible? Is it bigger trains or more trains? Or,
well, there's a new signalling system called ERTMS, which is devised in order to have shorter gaps between trains, that they can basically run close to each other in a safer manner. That will improve the existing track capacity. Then you can build more track capacity. And then if you have more trains, more operators, more frequencies, of course that brings bigger choice and more seats. Other things you can do, like having trains, double-decker trains, for example. There's various techniques to improve the capacity. But certainly market liberalisation is one of them, without a doubt.
Okay, I will change a little bit here. Economy. MTR, they have been in Sweden for quite some many years, and they still don't have to earn one Swedish single crown for too many years of business. Is it the same situation out in Europe, that your members are still not making any money?
That's a good question. We're an association. We are not involved in great detail with the business plans of our members. That's the business side of things. I think it's a mixed bag, to be honest. Some are doing okay, but others have difficulties. But then again, when you start a new business, when you start a new operator, it's highly unlikely, like with most businesses, that you turn a profit in the first year. So there is normally a lead time to actually achieve profitability.
But also this uncertainty that in the economic situation that makes that venture capital don't want to go into the train business and so on. Do you work with that as well? Or
I think there's a lot of private investment that would like to invest in the rail sector, in the passenger rail sector. We certainly see a lot of interest in Brussels. That means that unexpectedly venture capitalists or private equity or pension funds, they get in touch with us, with Allrail, and say, how's it looking, what's going on, which is really gratifying. And I think it's good, because the taxpayer, whether it's the Swedish taxpayer or the EU taxpayer or taxpayer of other countries, the rail sector cannot grow if it solely relies on taxpayer funds, because taxpayer funds are limited. They have to pay for healthcare and defence and many, many other things. So I don't think it's a bad thing if there's private investment, if there's some kind of mix of public and private investment, I think it's a very good thing, actually. And it can make better trains. It can make a bigger system. It can make it can provide new trains. I mean, we have many members where the trains are entirely funded by private investment. But we need a rail market that is fair, that has a level playing field. Because as soon as you have a situation where something is lopsided or anti-competitive, or where there's discrimination, that's the one thing that will put off private investment. And the result of that is then we turn back the clock and we only rely on the taxpayer again. And the rail market remains small. We want a bigger rail market, you see.
Now I hear here that MTR is going to make some money this year, probably. We hope for that. Have I forgotten something that I should have asked?
MDMS, MMS, what's that about? I mean, what's the idea of MDMS? I think one thing. MDMS is a very good attempt by the European Commission to make things better for EU citizens, for passengers, to encourage them to take the train by making things more accessible. And there are two ways I think that this is going to happen, or I hope it's going to happen through the MTMS. The one way is a bit like in aviation. Independent ticket vendors are able to grow. At the moment, they've got a tiny percentage of the rail market. And there are actually two companies here based out of Stockholm, two Swedish startups doing rail tickets.
Silver Rail?
No, they're quite established. They're not really a B2C, they're not really a consumer brand, but there are two small ones. One is RailTick, one is All Aboard. But there are others all across Europe. There's Happy Rail in the Netherlands, there's Trainline based out of Paris, there's Omio based out of Berlin, Koleo in Poland. So there's, you know, there's about five or six that are trying it out, and they realised they can do something that the incumbent in-house ticket vendors can't do. And what is that? They can sell cross-border, and they can sell tickets all across Europe on the rail. And if you go to an incumbent in-house ticket vendor, whether it's a ticket counter here at the station or a ticket machine or app or a website, they only tend to sell and show and sell the national network and maybe a few lines across the border, let's say to Copenhagen. But they won't sell you trains all the way to Paris or something like that. So these independent ones, they are trying to jump into or offer something that's never been there before. And we hope they succeed, because in a way, they're a bit like the online travel agencies of the aviation sector, who now serve about 40, 50% of all passengers. But in order to succeed, they need and provide this service, which doesn't exist yet. They need to have access to the data, also from market-dominant operators such as SJ. And they need to be paid the same fair commission as a market-dominant operator pays its in-house ticket vendor, you see. That's one thing. That's one key piece, so that we can grow these independent ticket vendors, a bit like the OTAs, you know what I mean, with OTAs and aviation. The other thing, though, is that because the dynamics of aviation are so different to rail at the moment, I mean, the biggest airline in Europe in terms of passengers, to my knowledge, is Ryanair, which I think has about 17%, 8%. Of European passengers, whereas in railways, I mean, contrast that to Sweden, what percentage does SJ have of the Swedish passenger rail market? It's going to be 90% plus in long-distance passenger rail, and in other countries too. In Germany, in fact, long-distance trains, they have DB, Deutsche Bahn, has 99% market share, which is incredible. And so you see the difference between 17 and 99. And when it comes, and because these brands have been around for 70 years, SJ, since the Second World War, I think, maybe even longer, Deutsche Bahn, SNCF, people kind of grew up with, people grew up with the brands. And so there's a kind of subconscious inherited brand equity. I mean, people, you're different, you work in the sector, but other people probably in this room, they will think, oh, I book a train ticket, I go to SJ. Okay, it's just natural, subconscious behaviour. And that's not the case. No one would dream of going to SAS to find flights of Ryanair. So it's a totally different dynamic. Therefore, until we've reached a stage like in the single European aviation area, we have to open the market-dominant in-house ticket channels of the incumbents so that newcomers like MTRX, Flixtrain and others that may want to come, Saga Rail, others that may want to come, to serve Sweden and other parts of Europe, they can be shown and sold. Because I can tell you, I used to work at a new operator myself. It's one thing to get the trains operating, that's expensive enough, to also to have to build up your own entire ticket infrastructure. That's really, really another huge expense that can make the difference between profit and or loss. Now, let's be honest, SJ, they want this too outside of Sweden. So when they go to other countries like Norway, Germany, they're demanding that they are shown and sold on the incumbent channels there. So we just want, basically, our policy is all tickets available at all ticket vendors, whether they are independent or incumbent in-house ticket vendors. But one other thing as well, this dominance of the incumbents in the retail space is being addressed now by competition authorities across Europe, in Spain, in France, and in Germany too, where the Bundeskartellamt, so it's a federal cartel office, is investigating the dominance of Deutsche Bahn in online ticket sales, and we're expecting a ruling in about 2 weeks, in fact. So that could have a knock-on effect on the rest of Europe.
The air industry has been very good in taking care of passengers when a sort of when a plane is when a flight is cancelled and so on. When we hear about trains, there are so many horror stories. You know, I was going from Berlin to this Glasgow meeting for Hållbarhet, and I heard a story about that, and it took a week, and everything was chaos. When will it be secure to go on a business trip with train in Europe, do you think?
I think two things. With aviation, some people say it's an amazing experience. I have had experiences of not being good at hubs of aviation, where, for example, there's been a storm, and at the service desk of the airline of the Alliance in Munich, there was a queue outside the door into the car park. It was so long. So it doesn't always work that well in aviation, in my view. However, what we really need in rail, this is a very pertinent question for rail, especially across Europe, because you need to change trains more often than you need to change flights or other modes of transport on average. Because of the historical national nature to. If you're traveling across border, you genuinely need to change a train. Whereas if you travel from point to point within the EU by flight or bus, or you drive in your own car, you don't really need to change. It's much less frequent. So this whole issue of what happens if there's a delay and I miss my connection, it's much more important in rail than it is in any other sector. And for that, we need some kind of, in our view, a mandatory agreement on journey continuation, meaning that if the passenger misses the connection and it's not her or his fault, she or he should have the right to get on the next available service to get to the final destination as soon as possible. Yeah, as soon as possible, basically. Even if there's no guarantee of a reserved seat, maybe the passenger has to stand or have a fold-down seat. The main thing is she or he gets to where she or he wants to go without having to pay any extra cost. And I think if they've got that kind of security that if something goes wrong and it's not their fault, then passengers will take trains more often. It's much better than having some kind of warning in the booking engine saying, well, you're combining two different operators here that don't have a through ticket, therefore you will have no passenger rights. That, to me, is a bit like having a cigarette packet warning on buying train tickets. So we don't want that. Unfortunately, though, that's what the state incumbents want. So we want basically a mandatory agreement on journey continuation. No money flows. It's just a right to get on the next available train to get to your final destination. Then we think more people will travel across borders by rail.
Anything else I forgot? when we meet each...
One more thing. I think, seeing as we are in Sweden, I think that this issue of SJ being very dominant in rail ticket sales is very important, because on the whole, Sweden has a fairly good image in Europe as we're one of the more progressive ones. We have a few different companies here. This is much better than in Poland or Bulgaria or even Italy. So in that sense, quite progressive. But what we ideally want to have in long-distance rail is that there is on all routes, on all major routes, a number of competitors that are providing choice, lower fares, higher frequencies, more capacity for the passengers. And that's not the case yet. There are some competitors like MTRX, Flixtrain, Schnelltarget, and they do certain routes, but there isn't really a rival network to SJ. And in order for that to happen, in order for private investors to invest in the rolling stock to say, okay, we're going to do that, you need to break open the stranglehold that SJ has on selling tickets, because I fear that private operators will not want to expand if their trains are there, but no one knows they're there. You know what I mean? And when I see that SJ, for example, on the route to Malmö, is often booked out days in advance, shows to me there's still upwards potential. There's high demand, but SJ on its own can't meet that demand, and you need other operators. Because any operator that is booked out a week in advance is too dominant, in my opinion.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me here today. It's a pleasure to be in Stockholm.
Great, thanks. Det var den här podcasten från Travel News. Jag heter Viggo Kavling och jag är chefredaktör på Travel News. Jag tackar för visat intresse och hoppas att du läser Travel News varje dag. Klockan strax efter 7 kommer vårt nyhetsbrev. Det är helt gratis. Prenumerera på det. Du kan också skaffa Premium, vår tjänst för dig som tror att kunskap är viktigt i reseindustrin. Det finns många som bara vill skumma på ytan. De läser bara början på artiklarna. Och så finns det de som är seriöst intresserade av att arbeta i reseindustrin. Och de har förstås Premium. Din chef har säkert Premium, men han tycker inte att du är lika viktig. Men gå till honom och säg, du, jag har hört att Viggo sa att man kan få en extra prenumeration på Premium om du redan finns i företaget för bara 1,000 spänn. Ett bra sätt att uppmana medarbetare att bli mer intresserade, och ja, det är väl lite status att läsa Premium, hoppas jag. Ja, vi får väl se. Tack så mycket för att du har lyssnat och ha en bra dag.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.